You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day, Annie McLaughlin here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, workers' stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Melbourne for 3CR and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Two stories this week with a side order of a happy news story. We talk with Josh Cullinan, Secretary of RAFU, the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union, about the no vote in the upcoming EBA negotiations with BWS and Dan Murphy's. We follow with Palestiners Union Business with a speech by Arthur Roris from the South Coast Labor Council at the most recent Sydney Palestine rally. But first, as promised, a side order of a good news story for workers. The Construction, Forestry and Maritime Employees Union, the CFMEU, secured a win for workers at the Golden Plains wind farm after taking industrial action. BMS Heavy Cranes, the company contracted for crane work, agreed to negotiate a national enterprise agreement with the CFMEU, addressing workers' demands for better pay and conditions. This includes provision for living away from home allowances, roster flexibility, wind turbine allowances, parental leave, paid RDOs and public holidays, weather safety, dispute resolution and coverage under the Mobile Crane Award, according to the CFMEU. The agreement will cover workers at the Golden Plains wind farm, the biggest in the country, and potentially other wind farm projects. Protected strike action began at the Rokewood site in rural Victoria on the 23rd of May. The Golden Plains wind farm has faced delays due to safety concerns, including the tragic death of a worker last year. The CFMEU has previously raised concerns about safety and the need for better conditions, particularly after the fatal accident. The news of the win came first on the 3CR Concrete Gang, the CFMEU Construction and General Weekly Update.
And apparently some good news today. BMS is putting the ink to the paper for signing an agreement today.
Oh, that's a good win, isn't it? Getting it done.
So congratulations to Corey Orr, all his gang down there who did a good job down there.
Got a result.
I think the first pay increase is like 42%
or 30-something.
Sorry, 37%. Yeah.
To bring it back into line with the rest of the industry.
That's a massive win, isn't it?
Biggest pay rise of all times. Yeah, fantastic job. That goes to show what you can do if you do the hard works. It was a hard time down there, apparently, out there in the open and where the windmills and all that is, and very hard to sort of,
cold, it's in the middle of
nowhere and all that. So it was a great effort and a great result. So congratulations to all the people involved.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues. Retail workers at BWS and Dan Murphy's are being advised by RAFU, the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union, to vote no to the latest substandard EBA offer by the owner of the companies. Josh Cullinan, the Secretary of RAFU, explained the situation for these workers.
Endeavour Group is the organisation which oversees BWS and Dan Murphy's, owns them, owns the brands. It's a demerged entity from Woolworths Group. The Woolworths Group continues to have a significant level of control. And what we've seen is a Woolworths-style agreement that's now being negotiated between Endeavour Group and the SDA, which just cuts a whole range of conditions, including pay, and is woefully substandard. And we're concerned by that. And workers have unanimously in our member meetings endorsed a no vote.
I noticed that some of the members, as you say, they've gone to Instagram to actually talk to fellow workers about why they don't agree with this offer that's been put forward. One of them was talking about how they want to change rosters so that higher rates won't be paid to people who are then training others, stuff like that. Can you talk to that?
At the moment, there's higher duties allowances, which are pretty common, right? In most workplaces, if you work at a higher level, you get the higher pay that goes with it. It often isn't a great deal, but Here we're talking the very minimum wages down right down the bottom anyway. So those high duties allowances, they were being abolished and replaced with what they're calling an in-charge rate. Now, the in-charge rate itself will be less than the high duties allowance that many, many workers already get. But it also specifically excludes a whole range of circumstances where your store manager might be off-site for the day. You know, they might be doing training of their own, or they might be managing other stores, which is common now, where there'll be a store manager managing multiple stores. So they're not on site. They're not overseeing anything going on. They're not the point of contact for complaints or concerns from customers. They're not opening or closing. They're not handling the cash. They're not securing the premises. Well, we say, well, that's higher duties. That worker has to be paid at a higher rate. And this agreement will specifically abolish that. And so that will see workers paid less. And, you know, it might only be $1 or $2 an hour less, but it adds up. And for these workers, that can make the big difference for a part-time or casual worker working not enough hours a week. They'll be end up being paid, I think, as one of those workers online says, less than the minimum award. And it's just outrageous.
The level of unfairness, you can see why people are standing up, because it's actually quite unjust, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And there's a couple of other elements of just how unjust it is. These are workers who are now being offered a sign-on payment. And you think about some of the other industries here, they're offering casual workers, the vast majority, casual workers, $80. Part-time workers, $110. This employer knows these workers are living in poverty. This employer knows these workers can't afford to put food on the table or a roof over their head or for their families, right? So they offer these tiny amounts knowing that it's going to elicit workers to step forward and support this shopping agreement. But the other part of the injustice is they're directly attacking core conditions that workers rely on. And we had this bizarre interaction with Endeavour Group where they told us it's not them, it was the SDA that attacked rights to arbitration of disputes. So at the moment, a worker isn't being paid the right amount or has an issue with their roster, they can take their dispute to the Fair Work Commission and have it arbitrated. That's changing. Under the new agreement, you'll have to have the consent of the employer. And employers never consent. Why would they agree to a third party making a decision, even if the third party is the Fair Work Commission? And what management has told us is that the SDA insisted, because the SDA is going to have their disputes go forward. Or we know that the SDA never takes a dispute against these employers, but this is the sort of unfairness, and these types of attacks on workers' rights is what Endeavour Group, but largely Woolworths, who are overseeing all of this. This is the way they've operated for a long time, and it's just manifesting a few different types of unfairness, one of them wages, one of them conditions, and one of them these union rights, which are really disappointing.
So it's about crushing the worker and making them live in a really insecure and low-paid jobs so that they will accept any chicken feed that's been thrown to them, because they really can't afford not to actually hold on to their job.
That's in a nutshell. They're destroying worker voice, destroying worker agency. These workers that are actually starting to organise and come together and do things together. And that's why we're in this really interesting time at the moment, Annie, where we're going from this phase of workers being unorganised and ununionised to now having these huge vote no's at Coles, at Woolies, at Macca's, and hopefully at Endeavour Group. And even if we don't get over the line this time, we're building to a time when these agreements, these shoddy, shonky agreements, are voted down. At the same time, there's all sorts of issues with the agreement itself. They're not explaining it to workers. They're not explaining a whole range of things. They're destroying all our materials. They're ensuring that managers report any contact from RAFWI members and ensuring managers put up SDA posters. So all that sort of stuff's going on as well, which we expect from the bosses. But we'll do what we can this time around. But we're on this trajectory, and this trajectory will see workers in organised workplaces taking back what they're entitled to.
Both of these outfits are selling grog. And I'm assuming that there are other issues with these shops that are cavernous. They're huge. They have very few workers on site. So I'm assuming that there are safety issues that aren't being addressed as well.
But safety is by far the biggest issue in these workplaces, right? Because they're selling a substance which is expensive, which is addictive, and which is controlled. And so you're not allowed to sell it to those under 18. You're not allowed to sell it to those that are intoxicated. And so there's all of these levels of issues in these workplaces which see offences happening far, far too often. And so they want a workforce which is not organised, which is not saying, look, we need security guards, or look, we need more staff on site. They don't want that. And so they're trying to ensure that they don't have a unionized workplace. But as you and I know, the more they fight back, the more they attack these conditions, the more they attack workers' pay, the easier it is for genuine unions and for fighting workers to organize and to stick together. And that's what we're doing here. There's lots of people putting their hand up, coming forward, sharing their stories. And that's what building union is all about.
Where does the government fit into this? Actually, it appears to me that it's really leaving these people who are working for these organisations in a really poorless position, unprotected, unless they have a fighting union. No laws, no regulations over this?
It's very hard to enforce the issue. So we know that Endeavour Group engaged in bad faith bargaining. They just presented an agreement with a whole lot of secret attacks in it. And after the first draft we ever saw. And so whilst we tried to engage with them on that, they frustrated that process. Members decided they want to just deal with the no vote rather than trying to argue, give us an extra 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of bargaining time. There are rights for workers to be properly informed about the terms of the agreement and the effect of those terms. And this employer is fundamentally failing that. Will the Fair Work Commission deal with that though? We don't know. Will the Better Off Overall test mean this agreement failed? We don't know. And those types of things at the moment remain in a really poor state. There should be a much greater emphasis placed on ensuring that any agreement that's done sees workers better off.
It's interesting that the Dan Murphy's advertising campaign leans heavily on the tradition of early Dan Murphy's relatives building up this business concern. Now, you're telling us that it's actually owned by a multinational company, right? Or an investment
firm. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. A multinational listed entity that has none of those familial connections. But we're talking about a group, just to give you a sense, BWS have been paying a uniform allowance for years and years, $1.25 per shift. When they increased the wages because the Fair Work Commission came in, increase came in, they secretly in the same week in mid-July abolished the uniform allowance because they say that we don't require a uniform, we only require preferred dress, which still requires a uniform allowance. This is the sort of things they get up to, try and trick workers, oh, well, there was an increase because the minimum went up, but don't even tell them that their uniform allowance is being abolished. So we are talking about a massive listed multinational company that profits on selling alcohol and you know, in workplaces which are not safe and where workers are insecure.
Yeah, and they're treated with total disrespect. How's it going? What's the next step?
Well, over the next week, the vote plays out. In a week's time, we'll know what the outcome of the vote was. We're hoping for a very strong no vote. We don't know with this employer how many invalid votes are being handed out. We know that Woolworths gave out somewhere 14 or 15,000 invalid votes to sway their vote. We don't know what's happening here on that front. There will then no doubt be a case if they say that the agreement was voted up and the Fair Work Commission will have to deal with concerns about what's gone on with this bargaining. If it's voted down, it'll be like every other sector. Now, we don't see that often in retail. At Apple, we saw $5 an hour wage increases, higher penalty rates, more leave when workers voted no. And we see that in other sectors. But if that's what happens here, workers vote no, then no doubt they'll be negotiating for a much better deal. Whatever happens in the years ahead, BWS, Dan Murphy's workers will continue to organise and build their union. And one day they will have all the conditions that they deserve.
It's not a struggling business, is it?
No, it's not. But that argument has been put to us that they are a struggling business and can only afford a sign-on payment of $80 and no wage increase this year. So that's what they allege, that it's not in a strong financial position. But we call them out on that. These are workers that worked through the pandemic, right? They had to keep turning up to work. Well, they lost their jobs. They were put on the front line. They had all sorts of people coming into their shops, people that, you know, had COVID. You know, they were coming into their shops. They were passing it on. They passed it on to their families, you know, and their reward for that, a dodgy agreement that attacks their conditions. This business, like any others, it's a corporate psychopath. It's got no care for its workers. It's got no care for the community. Its only care is generating profit. Workers are starting to see through that more and more in retail and fast food. And it couldn't be clearer at Dan Murphy's and BWS right now.
The other thing I'd like to know about is why do they do these sign-on
things. I mean, if they had a proper a rate of pay and a proper conditions, why would you be doing this weird little sign-on payment? What's that all about?
Yeah, so we're careful not to call it a bribe. It is an inducement, but so would a $10,000 sign-on payment be, right? And we would hardly be complaining if they were offering a $10,000 inducement. It's in the context of very low wages, very poor conditions, and a tax on things like union rights. So it's in that context that a small payment like this really needs to be seen for what it is. It's inducing workers living in poverty for a small payment just to be able to feed their kids.
Yeah, yeah. So what they're trying to do is say, we're nice guys. Is that what they're trying to do? Yeah,
absolutely. They're not being upfront and saying, we don't want to pay a small increase in your hourly rate that will last forever. They're not saying that. That's the truth. They're just coming straight up and saying, we're the nice guys here. You should vote yes because you're going to get this small payment. It won't come for a few months and you'll have to be working when it comes and you have to have been working now.
And so they may not pay you. They might sack you.
It's also in the context anywhere. I saw this at Swinburne Uni in 2013 where they wrote to every single casual worker that had worked one shift in the last 12 months. And they said $250 in your pay if you vote yes, right? Of course, when workers voted on that agreement, many of them never saw it because they technically only become entitled if they are working when it comes into effect. But so we see this all the time, very small payments to largely casualised workforces, but it's a core way of doing business because it gets votes over the line to embed an agreement which is less than satisfactory. There's an entitlement to vote is those workers that are working at the time of the vote. And there's been a little bit of conjecture. There was two big cases that sort of dealt with that. It was Swinburne University in 2013-14, and then we had Kmart in 2020. They settled that the issue is are you entitled to vote at the time? Therefore, do you work a shift as a casual worker during the access period, the week or two before the vote? It's not necessarily a perfect solution, right? Because you could be a casual worker that has a couple of weeks off then. We say it's not perfect, but it is the arrangement. Of course, it doesn't stop a business like this putting on a whole stack of workers and giving them a single shift. It could be the shift to explain the agreement. So we're going to give you a 1 3-hour shift where you explain the agreement. Workers don't even have access to the agreement they're voting on. We've got this bizarre situation. You have to ask your store manager. You can only access it on devices in store. So workers don't have access to the information or the materials or the agreement, but unfortunately, these employers also deploy these tactics, which is to hand out votes to workers who shouldn't have votes. Now, we want a much better system and a stronger system which sees all relevant workers get a vote, but it has to be an informed vote and it has to be on an agreement that actually lifts standards, not attacks them. So we're mostly talking about very casualised, we're talking about low wages and not enough hours to live on. So they are factors which entrench poverty.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues. On August the 7th, Italian dock workers in Genoa blockaded the transit of the Saudi ship Bakari Yanbu, which arrived from Baltimore, Maryland in the US and was scheduled to load military equipment produced by the Italian arms conglomerate Leonardo. The workers were refusing to become accomplices in the Gaza genocide. Chris Smalls, the legendary US union organiser, part of the first successful Amazon labour union on Staten Island, made a statement calling out big US union organisations such as the Longshoremen and the AFL-CIO on Democracy Now, saying Palestine is union business, that workers have a part to play in stopping transporting weapons to Israel. Smalls was speaking after his return as part of a humanitarian group striving to get food to Gaza after they were detained and he was reportedly beaten. At Sydney's most recent Palestine rally, Arthur Rowis from South Coast Labour Council lent his weight to this assertion, despite torrential rain the weekend after the momentous Sydney Harbour Walk for Humanity, which was calculated to be up to 300,000 strong.
I'm going to try and focus on one key point today, but before I do, I just want to acknowledge the absolute amazing and euphoric feeling in a mixed sense in the height of tragedy that we all felt on that bridge. Yes. We all felt it. We all felt that something moved underneath us that day. Not that we doubted, the justice of the cause. Not that we doubted the feeling of the international community, not that we doubted the strength of our own. But when you see the manifestation of humanity as we did, it sent that signal to the powers that be in this country and around the world. I've had messages from my comrades and friends from San Francisco through to Europe. No one misses the Harbour Bridge. No one misses the Harbour Bridge. It is one of the icons in the world. I want to come to the point now, given that on the South Coast, obviously it's an industrial town, we've got a long history of standing up with international struggle. I have to say the Palestinian cause and the cause for peace in the Middle East is particularly close to our heart. When some people ask us, well, when did the Labour Council get involved in this? I say since 1948. That is how long we've been waiting for a free Palestine. Since 1948 is the amount of time that we've been struggling for it. Through thick and thin, we've been sending delegates over on fact-finding missions and support through our overseas aid arm, and a big shout out to AFIDA, the trade union movement's arm that has been trying to provide aid all that time. The hospitals, the schools, the streets that we, the people of the South Coast, gave our money to help build have been reduced to rubble. What we say now is that when this finishes, and it will finish, that we want the children of Gaza not to be just the victims of genocide, but its survivors. It's survivors in a free Palestine. Yeah. And that is what's driving us now. To end the unspeakable, the inexcusable, but to give that hope that out of this, that justice will prevail and Palestine will exist and remain free. That is what's driving us. I'm sure that's what's driving you. In that process, we undertook a study last year, the South Coast Labour Council, to advise our affiliates, the unions on the South Coast, on where the workers of this country stand. We heard from our governments and they tell us, we don't send bombs and we don't send munitions. We also know that international law does not restrict itself to the bombs and the munitions. So we had an audit of our own region and we asked some very, very significant questions. If a workplace is undertaking work that is in contravention of international law or ICC, the Criminal Court or the Court of Justice rulings, are Australian workers exposed legally? Are they exposed? The answer to those questions, which I'll summarise very briefly here, is in many cases, yes. Not just the bosses, not just our governments through other jurisdictions, but the workers themselves. Now, I do not want to gild the lily, as we say, the chances of an individual worker being subject to those actions. However, it raises a second question. If that activity is illegal, does a worker have a legal right to refuse it?
Yes.
And the answer to that question is, in many cases, they do, but beyond that, they have an obligation to refuse it. So we wrote to the Prime Minister last year and the Minister for Defence, and the Minister for Defence Procurement, and asked them whether they can give an assurance to the workers of the South Coast, an assurance that they are not contravening international law, and whether the government was so confident in its response it would indemnify every worker. The response that came through from Minister Pat Conroy, in consultation with the Prime Minister's office and the other portfolios, was this: that they were confident that the export licence regimes were compliant with international law. Given what we now know, I plan to write to the Prime Minister again and remind him of his assurance and ask him to double down and back it up.
because as far as we're concerned, we will stand with any union that believes their members are being exposed to either international legal or a moral hazard or a workplace health and safety hazard. Any worker who may be unfortunate enough to believe that they are contributing to a genocide is in line from some pretty serious health and safety psychological risks, I would contend. And we've witnessed a few. If any worker is in that position, our advice is that they should consult the union. Our job is to back the unions in. But we are talking about industries from the factories to the ports that may well be in the gun here. And the way that we've read and the legals that we've asked interpret the law, materials are just as much in the frame as are the munitions. So we're putting it on the Prime Minister to double down in his assurance, and we give this guarantee to all of our unions. We will stand with any union that decides that it has no choice but to act to protect their members, to protect them from legal, moral or psychological injuries. That is the least we can do in our day jobs as a trade union movement. That is our assurance to everybody. Workers' health and safety is worth nothing if we can subject them to this, and we will back them in. Finally, can I just say this on behalf of the South Coast Labor Council? We have heard much over the last 2 years about what is and is not possible. The way we read it, having been one of the first to ask for sanctions, having the ACTU, the peak union body, demand sanctions and an end to the two-way military trade, having virtually every civil society that has a conscience here back in that call. Now we have Germany. Germany, the number two after the US military sponsor of Israel, suspend its military exports. We say to the Prime Minister, what is your excuse now? Because surely it can't be the fact of the fear of coming first. Most of us don't have a problem being the first to confront genocide. We see it as our obligation. And that is why we say, stop the bombs, keep the bombs out, let the food in, end the genocide and free Palestine.
Come go to the burying mine, oh, to join the picket lines. Stand on the union side, we'll stop those who dare to break the strife. Oh, oh, trouble and strife, such is the miner's life. To survive, we must organize. Long hours with no much pay, children's miles are hungry again. Much to our dismay, another worker died today. Oh, oh, down in the mines, we are living on borrowed time. To survive, we must unionize. So come take your broom in hand. We'll tar the bosses and the scales. For now, shall work down in the mines. Against the black flags, we'll hold. For some who have rebelled, thrown me in the police cells. But still we will meet and lead the prison march down Argent Street. Oh, oh, hear us cry, union songs as we pass by. We'll fight for freedom until we die. So come take your broom in here. We'll tar the voices in the gaze. For now I shall work down in the mines. Against the black flags we'll hold.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.